morning, everyone. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Sorry about the delay. Sometimes these things happen. And at this time, we have a quorum present, and it is Thursday, May the 29th, 2003. I'm going to open a work session, and we'll begin with consideration of House Bill 5059, Department of Consumer and Business Services Fee Bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have attached to the packet of material I gave you a hand-engrossed version of House Bill 5059. I would ask the agency to come forward and describe for you what has been deleted and what the impact is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Malkasian. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Thank you for the chance to discuss the amendments to House Bill 5059. We reviewed this bill during our public hearing portion of these hearings on our budget and this bill. This is the amendments that we're suggesting that, as Robin had indicated, are hand-deleted on the bill, are the result of our becoming aware of some concerns about the electrical fee increases. And to address those, we identified seven specific permit items that could be deleted from the bill that will not adversely impact our service delivery. Those are lined out on the bill itself. They primarily involve residential electrical permit fees. One line item deals with a permit that affects the high-tech industry that's no longer necessary due to regulatory streamlining.
How do you want to proceed?
Senator Carter. Well, yes. Let's go with any questions. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Several questions. First for Robin. Robin, what's the rationale of bringing a fee bill forward before we look at the budget bill and find out what the shortfall is based upon the needs of the department?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we actually have identified the shortfall. That is the reductions that we have identified in the building codes division. If you look at my spreadsheet, starting on page 31 of 37, if you recall during the discussion of the agency's budget, there was a revenue shortfall identified of $4.8 million, and 31.8 positions were eliminated, or 31.8 FTE were eliminated. With the fee bill, the agency will restore, let's see, on page 30 of 37, $1.6 million and 9.5 FTE as partial restoration of those positions as a result of the shortfall.
So, follow up, Chair. So, those needs are going to be identified and voted on in House Bill 5011.
House Bill 5011 has already incorporated those adjustments.
So then, in order to pass the fee bill, we're assuming that there's going to be no adjustments in House Bill 5011.
That's not correct.
Let me follow up. How do we pass a fee bill prior to passing the budget bill and knowing exactly what this committee has voted on and passed?
If you would prefer to do the budget bill prior to the fee bill, we can do that. The budget bill assumes passage of the fee bill.
The reason I raise that issue, Chair George, is part of our job is of my opinion, is to make sure that we go through each and every line item and make sure that the taxpayers and the fee payers of Oregon are getting the biggest bang for the buck. And I think it's presumptuous of us to pass a fee bill before we complete our job on the budget bill. With that said, I will still be a yes vote, but I still think that's presumptuous.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I will remind you that we did have public hearings on both the fee bill and the budget and discussed these issues during those hearings.
and I would remind Chair George that the work session is the purpose of that is to go through the bill and to finalize our discussion and to finally tweak the bill before we vote on it and pass it out.
I have no problem with that. Does anybody have an objection? I'll close the work session temporarily right now and then reopen, and we'll open with 5011.
I'm not necessarily advocating that. I just think it's a procedural issue that we should first know what the budget is and then what is the shortfall and how those fees get us there, not the other way around.
I can make a suggestion. Since we're in the fee bill and since the agency has made some recommendations,
right,
why don't we just sort of run through and refresh our memories as to what's in the fee bill, and then we'll know what to add or subtract later if we think we need more or less.
And those corrections have been made, correct?
That's correct.
Senator Carter.
And that was going to be my suggestion, that we could...
Representative Hanson?
Well, I would agree that we should go ahead with the fee bill. I think it's a chicken and an egg question. By the same token, if we would do the... It's hard to do a budget if you haven't determined what resources are going to be available to do the budget. So I think as long as the two are coordinated and interlocked, which staff has done on this, I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. You can argue both ways, and since we've already started, I think we should.
Representative Smith, I have no problem, unless there's a significant objection to closing and going in. Are you okay to go ahead and proceed through 5059 and then?
You bet. Chair George, I fully support both House bills. I just think it's a procedural issue, and I think it's, I'm not sure logically it makes sense to pass a fee increase, because that's what we're going to be asked to do, before we've voted on the budget and knowing what the hole is, because the rationale of an increase is to fill the hole that has been created. At least in my mind, that's how I see that. So, but I'm fine. I just want to raise that as a point of order for the future.
But I think the next question would be, Greg, you're okay here, but we want you okay on the floor. So what do we need to make sure?
Oh, no, please no, Senator Carter, I'm fine on the floor.
Yeah.
To me, it's just a procedural issue.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
Certainly.
What would make you comfortable this morning, and is it the department coming back, clarifying the holes, and then the amount? And maybe we don't need to go all the way to the bills, but clarifying the holes again.
And that's a great thought. What about dealing with that right now as we talk about, in other words, we talk about the backfill and the 5059. Talk about what the basis of those are. And then now, Robin just articulated, I think, to a certain degree, what would you be comfortable with?
Just run through the fee bill and see what's here.
Are you okay with, we'll just go ahead through the fee bill. If you object, you tell me, and we'll just
I do not object. I just
pass it. Just go through it.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, back to work.
Thank you.
Robin, sorry. Where am I saying? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure exactly what the committee is asking for at this point. Would you like the department to walk through the fee bill and the revenue assumptions?
I think that would be the clarity we were looking for.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Greg Malkasian again. I'll try to do this at a pretty high level. Basically, the fee bill does incorporate some new fees that were found necessary as related to new legislation from a prior session that Building Codes Division implemented. And then it also incorporates that element of some increases in fees, the 25% increase for the electrical program that provide for that increased revenue that you've been discussing in Policy Package 191 that would reestablish 9.858 positions in the budget. And then there was some additional discussion during the last legislative session and during the interim on the pawnbroker program, and the fee adjusted there is the outgrowth of a budget note from that session, and we had discussed that during our public hearings, and it was to assess the minimum fee required to manage a minimum level program, regulatory program over pawnbrokers. And then there are some fee adjustments basically in the insurance division to create a balance between the agent paid fees and then the certificate authority or insurance company paid fees. And that's the global view of this fee bill. Thank you.
Kathleen Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Can someone explain to me where, or show me where the fee increases were versus what they're going to be? I'm trying to find in the book.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm getting copies made of the handout that occurred when we had the public hearing that delineates the fees, what they're expected to generate, and also a comparison that was requested between the building codes fees and some other jurisdictions. So we should have that momentarily.
And so that'll show what the current fee is versus where we're looking to take it.
I don't have it in front of me because it's being copied.
But that's the intent.
Right. Okay. It should be probably in the packet if you didn't take it out from what we had presented before.
Correct. From when we had the public hearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, with respect to the deleted items, the original fee on line 10 of page 1 was $106, and it was proposed to be $133. The fee
will remain 106.
It'll remain at 106. Okay. The fee on line 13 will remain at $19 rather than $24. The fee on line 18 will remain at $25 rather than $31. And the fee on line 20 will remain at $45 rather than $56.
Thank you.
On page 2 of the bill, lines 26 through 29, they would be deleted. Those were new fees, and they would be deleted altogether.
Senator Morris, you had a lot of concern about the fact that you were willing to support these things if, in fact, that was going to move up the process of getting the inspections. Or is everything, are you seeing this as what you were hoping to accomplish? Okay.
Proof is in the pudding. Say again? Proof is in the pudding.
I think that's a major question because, you know, in all the committees, not only this committee, but the other committees that I serve on and committees I'm sure the rest of our folks are serving on, we're asking the question, are we going to be able to expedite service out here? Because economic recovery is dependent on a whole bunch of things going well. And what I'm going to need from you is reassurance that we're going to be, you know, expediting process and during this budget period.
Mr. Chair, I can absolutely give you that assurance. We've discussed this thoroughly with Mark Long, the Administrator of Building Codes Division, and we have confidence with respect to the management of the fees and the revenues, as well as plannings for regulatory streamlining opportunities that we can provide the level of service that's appropriate.
This to be handed out, so we'll kind of be at ease here. Representative Smith, we're back in action.
Thank you. I hope I'm not digressing or getting off. I'm just looking at your revenue descriptions here.
It's your job.
Share with us a little bit about the agreement between the department and the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, and that they provide 50% funding for research and analysis operations. Tell me what the research and analysis operations are. And what's the agreement? How long's that agreement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, if I could ask Scott to come up, I think he probably has the or that being
the workers' comp research.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the research monies for that relate to the incident rates and accident rates. I think we provided some materials when during the OROSHA portion of our budget presentation as a response that was requested, and that's the nature of the activity.
Follow up. Is that a grant? It says an agreement, so I'm assuming there's a contractual relationship. It's ongoing.
Representative,
I just have lots of questions.
Okay, there
you go. How was it? Remind me, how was it that we came up with a 25% increase versus a 20% or a 30% or some other number?
Mr. Chair, if I could ask Mark Long, the Administrative Building Codes Division, to come up and discuss that. I think it's probably as simple as identifying the revenue requirements, but.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes and rest of the committee. Representative Smith, can I answer the question? This, in the electrical program, these fees, I'd like to make just a couple points, if I could. These fees are currently being assessed in our local areas. So what we're talking about is continuation of the fees versus a rollback, a further rollback. How we got to assessing these fees is looking at our costs in the electrical program for inspection in primarily the areas that we serve. We serve, if you recall, 2% of the state from a revenue base, mainly in eastern Oregon. And looking at where our fees range, I think there was a comparison chart that was put out where we compare with the communities around us, what our operating needs are, and then working with the industries that we serve. This was the recommended number through our electrical board and our budget folks. And again, the reason why we've come to you with the seven line items is we've looked at it again since the hearing in February and identified the seven areas that we could roll back. And so I don't know what the net effect, if it ends up being 23% overall or what that number is. I didn't go into that level of detail. But that's how we get to that number. I hope I've answered your question and be happy to.
You have. I follow up, though. So then is there, as we're looking at these fee increases, there's the potential that some of these fee increases may not cover the actual cost of providing the service, and that other fee increases are revenue to cover those? I mean, it seems like 25% isn't going to be the magical number for every one of these line items. In some areas, are going to have greater expense where others are not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, from a holistic viewpoint, that's correct. Whether it's in the electrical area or in a structural area or any of those kinds of things, at Building Codes, you may recall, we receive monies from three different sources: licensing fees, surcharges, and permit fees. All those fees are generated to support the programs. These are the fees that support our operations, our permits, and some individual line items may or may not pay for themselves, depending upon travel, location, those kinds of things. But the overall program balance between permit fees, surcharges for operations, plan review fees, you'll see that in there as well, support the activities of those, in this case, electrical inspectors that have to do a variety of things, looking at a water heater at one time versus some larger industrial work that might be coming down the pike. So
one last follow-up. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Chair George. So is it possible then that the folks who are paying the manufactured housing or the modular dwelling service fee are actually subsidizing the multifamily residential over 1,000 amp fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, you know, without looking closely, it's possible. I don't believe so in that particular example. What probably is more accurate is plan review, which is the typical situation in a building department activity. Plan review is typically more efficient as far as our costs go, because it's in your office, it's pretty controlled. You can you look at the documents versus the inspection sides. If it's 300 miles away, which can happen in our operations because we cover a large geographic area, sometimes you have to have multiple callbacks. The fees assume, I think, 3 to 5 inspections, but sometimes it takes 7 or 8 to get the person to an appropriate level of safety. So I don't know that particular line item. I think that, and I would suggest it's probably more plan review would be the one that is of helps offset the permit fees. It's really plan and design work versus inspection work. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Greg, if you get a complaint in which the person says, I think we're paying too high of a fee, what's the process there? I mean, is there a mechanism for taking a look at it and saying, well, it might be smart to bring it down? For example, if you had some manufacturer said, look, this is in-house, this is standard, yeah, should be able to streamline it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll respond from a larger perspective than if Mark, if you're willing, has something specific to add. But the basic premise of the development of our fees are done from looking at what the revenue requirements are, forecasting those revenue requirements with respect to the legislatively approved budget and what the requirements are from that, and then analyzing to as much detail as we can that level of fairness in the allocation of the fee to the services received.
You are then actually looking at what your cost of delivery is relative to each area, and then not totally in detail aligning it with that, but that is a consideration. This is just, I'm just trying to get this on the record,
Mr. Chair.
And I understand it, plus anyone else who might be listening, that these are not arbitrary, but in fact reflect a thoughtful process.
Mr. Chair, I could not have said that better.
Senator Dukes.
Mr. Chair, I was here when we did all of the inspection stuff, and then I was here when we started not doing all of it, and now I'm here while we're not doing very much of it. And it seems to me that the situation we're in now is probably the most costly of all of them. I mean, we have independent cities and counties out there deciding what their fees should be for their jurisdictions and working with their contractors. And then we have us, and we do very little, but we have to do pretty much all of it for wherever we are. What I'd like to see in the next 2 years is your agency taking a look at whether we should be doing how we should be handling. Should we do it all? Should we do none of it? Should we stay where we are? Should we modify it? And I thought about a budget note, but you'd probably have to staff up for a budget note. And you're a fairly lean agency anyway, so I didn't want to do that. But is that something you could kind of have some conversations in the next year and a half with internally and with your partners to see? Because, and what I'm headed for is what is most cost efficient. Not that every little community wants to run their own because they think they can make a nickel off of it. That's nice. Or they want to control their own destiny, because I just saw what happens, and you all got to see what happened when my little community controlled their destiny and the lady ended up with a condemned home that they approved. So I'm looking at cost. If we're still going to be trying to climb out of a recession in 2 years and we want to encourage business, having to continually increase our fees to cover our costs, which are higher because we're doing less and less and can spread it, you know, less and less, I would just like you to take a look at that and have some conversations.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, we intend to do that. As a matter of fact, from a broader perspective of the agency as a whole, one of our strategic initiatives is a regulatory review to look at those types of things from the perspective that you're discussing.
Senator Morris, and then Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm intrigued by what the cynics outside this building would say would never happen, and that is regulatory reform having a positive impact on the cost of government. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit when you said that the deletions in this fee bill are driven by the regulatory reform process, and maybe explain a little bit the drivers behind that and because I see that as a very positive thing. We need to talk about positive things when they happen. So.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, the deletions on the that related to regulatory streamlining are those on page 2 of the bill, lines 26 through 29. And they actually relate to the high-tech industry, and it's the elimination of a permit that was previously required. And perhaps Mark Long could give a little more information about the process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, this is just one example that I suspect that will be in front of you at some point, either down the road. This specific item is in the high-tech community, as Mr. Malkasian indicated, where prior to this session, the manufacturers were required to have individualized permits for each piece of tool manufacturing equipment they put in their factories. Thousands of pieces of equipment. It's engineered and built typically overseas. It has redundant systems of inspections. And then there was an additional layer that was being placed upon these companies. And through House Bill 2717 and some broader regulatory streamlining efforts that the department is working on, this regulation was changed so that instead of the focus being every piece of equipment, whether it had an analysis or not, we only focus on the equipment that didn't have an analysis, which seems to make sense in looking at your regulatory structure. As I met with each of you, I shared, you know, some of the other regulatory streamlining things that we're working on. We may be talking about other opportunities to look at this structure as well as our operations standpoint as far as, you know, what's the appropriate level of fees, how do you consolidate things, and how do you make sure that we are providing the greatest level of efficiencies in the statewide system, not just at the state, but across the whole state. So I hope I answered your question, but that's really how we got there.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that same vein, the statewide minor label plan is going to be an incredible help in terms of streamlining. So you can get one book of minor labels that are multi-jurisdictional rather than have a separate one for a small community that maybe you're only going to use 2 of the 10 minor labels before they would expire. And that's going to be, I think, a real significant streamlining. Mostly I want to concur with what Senator Deeks asked, that you look at the whole picture and the whole structure, because now we're down to 2%, the most expensive 2% of the state to inspect and maintain a program in. And if we continue on this course eventually and we have to recover the cost from the permits for just that 2% of the hardest group to inspect, it's going to be huge fees for recovering that piece of work. And I don't know what the answer is, whether it's for example letting the cities that have taken over their own programs, also requiring them, if they're going to do that, that they have to also pick up some of the rural areas outside of their boundaries, so that might be more efficient than doing it with state workers. Whether we need to, what the balancing is. I think the industry can tell us what works best. I don't think we need a budget note. I think it's something that the industry is aware of, the department's aware of, and those discussions are going to happen and occur, but they have to happen.
Senator Carter.
I know it's been a long time since we probably, back in February when we looked at these bills, but if we will recall, that's when I was looking at some of the comments made by the new department chair, and one of the things that she brought up was regulatory action that she would be reviewing across the department, and especially looking at the issues that came up very strongly, which was the construction board as well as the codes, a building codes area. And so I think probably we have forgotten some of the stuff that we went over with regulatory issues or some of the things that she mentioned that she'd be taking a strong look at, and that was one of the things that Robin had brought to our attention as I looked in my notes last night early on in the committee.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. In the semiconductor program, what's the average amount of time, just on average, that would be spent on a manual review?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I could provide a best guess. This is a new program that was put in place during the interim as an initial step to deal with the high tech and the manufacturing problem that we've now resolved through your help, through legislature. So my best guess would be anywhere from 3 to 5 hours, and then there's follow-up. I can't recall if it's annual or a biannual field inspection that occurs at the factory. But again, those are no longer requirements as a result of House Bill 2717. So
that's right in line with the other fees.
And again, Mr. Chair, just in follow-up conversation, I'd be happy to share at some other time the regulatory streamlining efforts that the department has taken on. There's been a package of 7 or 8 bills that through the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, the department, the divisions, the legislature, our work group, a variety of folks that we actually have successfully moved through the session. As a matter of fact, the last one was heard, I believe, yesterday on the House floor. So we're very excited about that. 2717 is one of those, but there are others, the minor label, a few other things as well. So there's a lot of work to be done, but we're very excited about moving forward, and these help us continue that effort.
Before we go back to Representative Smith, I want to thank Mike, and I'd like to note the tape right there about 2 minutes ago where he actually said that the legislature had done something that was good. After that, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. I'm looking at the pawnbroker annual activity fee. The proposed fee is $350. I see that the Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee didn't ratify a request to increase the fee to $1,000. What was the rationale for asking for $1,000, and why were they not willing to go there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, during the last legislative session in the presentation of our budget, this particular program, the expenses of the program were far exceeding the revenues because we only have about 38 pawnbrokers that are registered in the state. And in order to cover the costs of the program, it required a significant increase. And the legislature, actually the committee, put in a budget note for us to look at what the minimum requirements would be, statutory requirements to for program size. And we reviewed those requirements, and we made some adjustments. We had a bill this session to reduce the number of examinations that were required from annual to biannual, where you do a field examination in the interim year. The examination would be done by record submitted to the agency for review, and we were able to reduce the allocated FTE from 0.6 to 0.2 for that program. And we can manage the program at a level of $350 per registration rather than that higher amount.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Smith, I'll go back to you. If there's not any further questions, are you okay to go ahead and move the bill now, or we can go ahead and open 5011?
No, I'm fine moving the bill. It was just more of a procedural point, I guess.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the amendments to House Bill 5059 as noted by the agency.
The Hand and Gross.
The Hand and Gross.
Okay, Senator Dukes has moved House Bill 5059, Hand and Gross. The recommendation do pass for the floor.
First, we have to amend it, then we'll pass it.
We have to amend it, yes. Thank you. All right. Now, we're dealing with the amendments. Are there any questions about that? Any gross amendments? Without objection?
Then, Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 5059 as amended to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any questions or comments about that? Okay, I think what we'll do is we'll actually have the members poll. Okay. Call the roll. Going to try to get Margaret?
She asked to call her. We're ready to vote.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Senator Dukes?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Go ahead, and then we'll see if she comes in.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Chair George?
Aye.
She asked us to call her when we got ready to vote.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is
there a procedure, a way that we could allow her to vote later on this?
I think there's no problem.
Yes. Okay. Let's do that. Yeah. All right. And 5059 has been passed, and well, with the caveat that we will in fact allow Senator Carter to vote at some later time with approval.
Mr. Chair, if I could get the carriers at this time for full and the House and Senate.
Okay. Senator Morris, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay. And in the Senate also?
Sure.
All right.
And I need a House.
Okay. Hey, great. Okay. Representative Smith.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and close the work session then on House Bill 5059 and open the work session on 5011 the top again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first issue in front of you is the ending fund balances. The department has distributed a report that looks like this. I would ask them to come forward and briefly discuss this, cover any questions that members might have. As you may know, legislative council and leadership is looking into the issue of ending fund balances, and because of that, LFO is not making any recommendations at this time.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Hara. I'm the administrator of the Business Administration Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I hope you have found the packet that we've included. Basically, we have answered the questions that were asked in the memo from Legislative Fiscal Officer Ken Rocco, and I can lead you through this, or I'd be happy to answer any questions. One of the things I'd like to point out in the third paragraph on the first page is in our DCBS fund balance policy are the four guiding principles that we use in setting the fund balance policy for each of our programs. And they are, one, to meet the cash flow needs of the account. Second, to accommodate the timing of receipts and expenditures. The third is to ensure stable funding for legislatively approved programs and services during uncertain economic times, and I think we currently fall into that situation. And then fourth, to minimize the volatility of fee and assessment changes. One of the things that we hear most from our customers is they need to be able to predict what fees and assessments they'll be paying in the coming years as they plan their budgets. So we try to take a five-year planning horizon when we set our fees and assessments so that we can minimize those rate changes as much as possible. In the following pages after that, we basically answer the questions that are in the memo for each of our major programs, starting with the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool Non-Limited Fund, then going on to the Workers' Benefit Fund, and then into the CBS fund and its component accounts, which include the Workers' Compensation Premium Assessment Operating Account, which basically is about 70% of the CBS fund. And if you...
Here, George, I'm confused. We just voted to raise their fees, multiple fees, and now we're looking at their ending fund balances. So... Am I the only one that's thinking that? What did we vote to raise fees for if we're now looking at taking ending fund balances?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you take a look at the back of the very last page, which is the attachment 8B, just to reiterate, the fees, most of the fees that are collected by the department are restricted to certain purposes, so that an ending fund balance in the workers' benefit fund can't be used for the insurance division.
When you say restricted, Chair George, are you referring statutorily restricted?
That's correct.
So it's nothing more than a bill, and we can modify that. Passed by both chambers and signed by the governor.
Senator Dukes?
No offense, folks. This is a budget I hate almost as much as I hate ODOT. They have more little divisions that we have given them. I mean, since I was here, since Methuselah, I was here when we combined this agency. I still remember the meeting, the caucus meeting, sitting in there talking what all that particular governor wanted us to stuff together in an agency. And we did it. And you're not going to be able to take workers' benefit fund money and use it to pay electrical inspections. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
And that's their biggest problem, is that they come with all of these ending fund balances, but I was looking through them, and we can't get anywhere with them. So we might as well trust the financial advisors to tell us whether there's enough or too much in them, and then just let them go.
But Senator Dukes, in all fairness, mm-hmm. we just voted to raise their fee increases before we know that.
But not for these things.
Okay.
We're now looking at ending fund balances for all kinds of interesting little things that they do over there. And the workers' benefit one is the one I just finished. I mean, there's OMIP. completely unrelated to whether or not the contractors wanted to. They paid to get inspectors, which is an operating thing. And it doesn't have anything to do with all this other little stuff that we stuffed into this agency.
Scott, can you help us clarify this?
Now, if we could do this, that would be nice. But
actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I misspoke. It's actually attachment 8A and 8B. And this relates to the fees that support the building codes division, which is also primarily what the fee bill involves. And if you take a look at their projections, mm-hmm. they are projecting deficits in these programs. With respect to the issue of whether or not fees can be used for other programs, that's precisely what I was alluding to in my comment about the fact that LFO is not making any recommendations at this point. Legislative Council is looking into whether or not any of the ending fund balances can be used for other purposes. If Council identifies that they can, then a bill will be proposed and will be in front of the in front of the members, in front of the legislature, to make that determination. However, it's my understanding that should council identify that, I doubt that the ending fund balances would be used for anything within the department. I think the focus is on finding offsetting revenue for the general fund.
Representative Hanson?
Well, if we choose to go that course, I would think the Funeral and Consumer Protection Trust Fund would be the one that we'd really focus on, because the people that are protected there probably will raise the least objection. But other than
the
that,
raise,
other than that,
we're
not going to. Yeah, that's right.
What will they think when they listen at home?
Yeah, we're out on the internet, aren't we?
Yes. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of some of the previous discussions by Senator Hanson with respect to where this building code is going, actually inspecting such a small percentage of the the building activities, and then looking at these projected fund balances, I'm wondering, and this may be too late in the game, I don't know, but some kind of a budget note that directs some advanced planning so that when we come back here in the next session, there has been some forethought into where we go, because if we're continuing to drive these negative balances and then the fees continue to go up and up, we reach a point of where things start to fail. And if this is an advanced planning, there may be some things that we should ask the agency to do so that we're not coming back with a program that doesn't work.
Well,
because
Mr.
the
Chair,
direction of these speed balances, it would suggest that we do have a program that's headed to a major problem.
Mr. Chair, this leads right into my next issue, which are the budget notes. I think we're going to have to come back, regardless of how far we get today, to deal with the issue of the budget notes. So I think your suggestion is timely, and it, with your permission, I'll work with the agency to draft something and add that to this, to the budget notes that are in this bill.
But I was understanding with what you were saying before we started is that you, in fact, you're looking at that, you're moving that direction. Is that correct? In anticipation of negative.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Morse, building codes is very much on our radar screen and the financial situation that they're in and looking at both revenue and expenditure options and how to best make that program work. It's certainly an area of concern, and if the economy continues going the direction it seems to be going, that's not going to improve anytime soon. So right now we're balancing a BB on a razor blade, and hopefully we'll come back to the next session with a good workable solution for the statewide program at the local level as well as the state level.
And, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to incorporate into that a little bit of the direction the committee was giving them in terms of looking at how these services are delivered and perhaps ask them to make some recommendations to the next legislative assembly. I understand that puts the agency in a bind because there are certainly differences of opinion around the state as to how these services should be provided, but I would like to see that incorporated into the budget note.
So, Reverend, do you want to move for approval of the recommendation relative to the imbalance at this point, or you don't have a motion?
I don't have a motion, Mr. Chair, because I didn't recommend anything.
Okay, so it's just
it stands as it is.
Very good. You want to proceed?
No, Mr. Chairman. One recommendation with respect to the budget note. Planning has assumptions, and depending on what assumptions you make, it directs the outcomes. One of the assumptions I would make is that we plan for a structure that accommodates a recession, so that we don't just look at a solution that's driven and solved by a better economy, because these things need to be sustainable when things are down as well as when things are up. So that would be a recommendation that I would make in terms of how we structure things in the future.
I do know that does factor into the department's planning, that in fact the recommendation that comes before you today recognizes reduced workload and reduced staffing, but also recognizes the need to maintain a certain level of services. So somehow I'll try to work some language that gets at the I think what I hear you saying is that you don't want assumptions that are solely revenue driven. So see what we can do with that. Yes, Mr. Chair. You received copies of the, if you recall, we had a fairly significant discussion of the performance measures during the public hearing that we had on this budget. There were questions raised and concerns raised about how some of those performance measures were drafted. The department has made the revisions based on those discussions. They distributed a copy to you earlier. There's a copy now in front of you, again, at your desk. The department is prepared to discuss the revisions if necessary. Otherwise, the committee can move to approve.
What's the pleasure of the committee relative to performance measures?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I was just curious if Robin remembered what the problems were 3 months ago.
Yes, I do. One of them had to do with what percentage, well, actually, they laid it out for you. Under measure 4400-8, the original language did not measure a desired focus on excellence, and so they adopted the more challenging language. And measure 4417, they didn't include alternative dispute resolution in the process of closing cases. And then, if you remember, everybody got completely confused over 4418, which had to do with building codes modifications and the measure that they were using to identify that. So they have made those changes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
So with 4418, are we trying to get more Oregon-specific ones or fewer? I always felt we liked the national code.
To the agency.
Fewer. I'm sorry. The hand motions in the back are good. Yeah, thank you. That was it, I guess.
Thank you.
I understand.
Was adequate.
Yes, yeah, I know. We're looking for fewer. Okay.
Any questions about performance measures? You guys, we can just continue to look at them if you have any questions. No, that's what we're here for. That's actually good.
I'm on the very first page. I can work my way backwards here. It says percent of confirmed complaints resolved with relief for the consumer. And our 2005 target is only 70%. I just wondered why it wasn't higher.
Mr. Chair,
from the
count on it. Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, Greg Malkasian, Deputy Director again. When we were discussing the appropriate target for this particular measure, my recollection is that oftentimes a complaint is found to be that's actually received is found to be not really a valid complaint with respect to an insurer, and so we set the percentage at an amount that we felt we could achieve a highly aggressive consumer support to respond to a consumer's complaint. But I believe,
assuming that confirmed complaint meant that it was a legitimate complaint, and so that would have left out the folks you're talking about. Maybe I read that wrong.
It does say confirmed complaint.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'm Corey Strassinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. In the Insurance Division, consumer complaint function addresses complaints that consumers make with respect to the activities of insurance companies, the companies that we regulate. In other words, these are not complaints about activities of the department, but rather complaints about insurance practices or conduct. We are not always able to get the insurance company to behave in a way that we would like them to behave. In some cases, the consumer must unfortunately resort to other means, a lawsuit, for example. But the role of this department is to attempt to modify the behavior of insurance companies to resolve complaints that their customers have with them. So
70% is high.
We believe 70% is a good high measure. We would like it to be higher, but because this is a new measure, we think that's a good stretch goal for us to start with.
Thank you.
Any further question about performance measures? If not, do we have a
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we adopt the approve the revised performance measures as distributed by the agency.
Okay. Any questions? And without objection? So
yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, moving into the budget adjustments, given the discussion that we had on the fee bill, I thought it might be appropriate for the department to do a brief overview of Policy Option Package 191, which is the restoration of other funds and eight positions based on the adoption of the fee bill. Okay. So if someone from the department would like to, you know, just briefly walk through what is being restored.
191.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Malcasian. When we discussed our original budget, we anticipated a significant reduction in the building codes division of, I think, about 31 positions. And this package anticipates that relationship between the fee bill, the increased revenues required to restore 9.58 positions. So the action of approving the fee bill will allow us to restore 9.58 positions to provide the level of service that we discussed earlier today.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. On page budget page 268, page 54 of 78, it shows $70,212 of other revenues. What are those other revenues?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, page 78.
Page 54 of 78 on the Building Codes Division. Budget page 268.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, which line item was that?
It's 0975. It's under other, under the income portion. And it says other revenue. And then it has the requested budget of $70,212. And I'm just curious what.
This one?
I'm just curious what $70,000 is for. Where that's coming from.
Mr. Chairman, for the record again, my name is Scott Harrow with the Business Administration Division. Representative Smith, other revenues usually is a catch-all revenue for anything from the sale of copy of materials that people ask for in public information requests. I'm trying to think for building code specifically what falls under that area. Senator George, Representative Hansen, yes, code books could fall under that category of the sale of code books, which would likely be the most prominent item in the building codes division under that category. We can get a more detailed breakout of what falls under that $70,000, if you like.
Well, I think that's important because if you go back and you look at what we passed on House Bill 5059, and you take just the first four categories, that equals the $70,000. And so I just want to know, I'm trying to compare apples for apples, and what is $70,000? Where is it coming from? And what do we intend to use it for? Yeah, if I could just get that in the future, that'd be fine. Thank you.
All right.
I have a whole slew of questions.
Okay.
You better stay right
here. Relative to 191?
Well, related to the building codes division.
Can you pick them up as we move through the...
Chair George, I'm still at the 30,000 foot level with questions I want to ask.
Okay.
And I apologize to the committee. I just feel we have a due diligence to, to ask certain questions. And I know that holds up the process, and I apologize. But I just feel I have a due diligence to ask those.
Why we get paid the big bucks?
Greg, were you
share with me, please, some of those big bucks?
Hey, if you're a farmer, these are big bucks. Greg, were you through talking about 191?
Mr. Chair, yes, I was.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Let me try this.
Okay.
Not try it. Here. It doesn't work, but I'll try it. I move that we approve policy option package 191.
Okay. Now, that doesn't affect the questions you're asking.
No.
Yeah.
This is just the first package. There's
okay.
more.
Any discussion of the motion?
George, I still have a few questions I need to address before I'm prepared to.
Oh, on 191. Oh.
And I guess, like I said, I'm still at the 30,000 foot level. I'm back at their budget as a whole.
I guess what I'm curious is, this adds some people in that I think all of their partners came in and testified they need, or we're going to seriously slow down construction as we know it today. And as we know it today, it's not doing real well. So I'm just wondering if maybe your questions have to do with the final motion, which is to adopt the budget.
I think they do, Chair George. Senator Dukes, for example, under services and supplies, there's $48 million allocated to that.
And considering that it looks like we're not going to be able to move the budget out today anyway, that would give you time to meet with the agency between now and next week when the budget comes back.
I just want to be a yes vote, and in order for me to be a yes vote, I need to...
But you could maybe meet up with them between now and when the budget comes back. I'm sure they'd be happy to.
My colleagues on both sides are making that recommendation. So would you be willing to do that and sit down with them? And because we will not move at all today.
I will, but Chair George, I think we have a fiduciary obligation to truly go through the budgets in a cost control manner. And not necessarily just a political manner.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions I have relate to controlling costs. And so I will go wherever the committee wants to go. I just don't feel comfortable casting an aye vote until I know what's being spent on office expense, what's being spent on services and supplies. Today in caucus, we heard one of our members say that they were a no vote on the floor simply because they saw a certain line item under services and supplies. We heard that in caucus. And so I think the level of conversation in the House caucus has gotten to that point.
Okay, I want to deal with the motion. So, Dukes, would you withdraw the motion? Let's go ahead and move through all of the adjustments, and then we'll see where we are, and then we'll come back and address each one of them as for approval. Are you okay with that?
Chair, what I was hoping was, as I'd like to not be here with Santa Claus in December, I was hoping that we could go through them and maybe adopt them if we can. Since we're not going to adopt the budget mm-hmm. and make the final thing, we could always come back next week if Representative Smith finds something that needs to be adjusted and make that adjustment. But if they answer all of his questions satisfactorily, we would be ready to move the budget.
Mm-hmm.
It is a management issue, I have to tell you that. And if maybe if Representative Smith would ask questions for that package, and then we could approve that once he's gotten satisfaction, if there's further clarification needed. We got to figure this out.
Right.
And I don't think it's...
I can address my questions by package. Okay.
Then if you withdraw the motion, let's just go ahead and move through these without any action on them, and then we'll see where we are at the end and then come back and approve them.
Senator, what he said is that he could ask that package.
So while we're on this package, he could ask these questions.
Okay, you can. All right.
Okay, right here.
All right. Any questions about then policy package 191 and the motion to approve?
Mr. Chair, if I could add a recommendation, if we could walk through the packages and have members indicate whether they had a problem or not, and then at the very end, my recommendation would be to move the packages in total.
As well, yes, that's what the
motion. I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay, all right. Then, Robin, we'll, is there anything further on 191? If not, we'll move on to the approval of the.
Mary has some questions on 191.
Yeah. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Go forth. No comments.
We're getting ready to approve 8 positions. Are any of those 8 positions part of the line item for professional services? I'm trying to figure out. We spent $14,680,000 on professional services. Are any of those 8 positions related to the professional services?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, those 8 positions were actually positions that were eliminated in Package 070, which acknowledged the revenue shortfall. And with the passage of the fee bill, these are the positions that we are able to restore in the budget. They're current existing positions in the agency budget. The professional services and these positions are separate issues.
Follow up. So let me take a different stab at this. Under services and supplies, we have approximately $48 million budgeted. Of that $48 million, how much is allocated to those 8 positions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, none. The positions are under personal services. That's where the cost associated, and then there is a related services and supply allocation cost that's across the board. On it might help on page 150. It lists the specific positions so that you can see that they're actually 4 of them are electrical inspectors, 2 are structural, mechanical inspectors.
Chair George, the reason I'm being a pain in the butt here is I'm going through this budget and I'm looking at total office expense of $4,171,000. I'm looking at other services and supplies of $1,376,000. I'm looking at services and supplies of $48 million. I want to know what are we getting for $53, $54 million worth of stuff. I want to know what do we have. I want to know what do we get for this. I want to know where it's being stored. Those are fiduciary questions we have an obligation to ask. Any one of us, if we're in business, would want to know what are we getting for $48 million in services and supplies.
Be ready. Go for it. Just ask the question.
So, thank you. I only have like 5 of them. Well, let's go. If you allow me just 4 minutes, 5 minutes. under the total of your department, you list out approximately $48 million for services and supplies. What does $48 million get us in service and supplies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, it purchases a wide variety of items, anywhere from third-party administration of the OMIP program that we contract with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield to provide claims services for the insureds in that program. In building codes, we have contract services with the Oregon State University for certain portions of the manufactured housing program. We have actuarial services that we contract for in the insurance division. It's a vast enterprise that we operate, and we have a lot of different professional service costs that we contract with others to provide those services for us.
So then under service and supplies, that is very different than from the office expense of $4
million. Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, services and supplies is the category which office expenses is a subset of that overall expenditure category.
When in our financials, they're separated out as two separate line items. I guess I'm curious as to services and supplies has its own section, and then you go back up further up the page and you have office expense of $4,171,000 under line item 4175.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, that $4 million is a subset of the $47.6 million total S&S services and supplies. Basically, the budget is broken down into four major categories: personal services, services and supplies, capital outlay, and special payments. And then within those categories are individual line items that you'll see in the budget.
So, follow up. So under capital outlay, that is new purchases of furniture, equipment, et cetera. And for this biennium, other than some technical equipment and some processing hardware, there's going to be no new purchases.
Senator George, Representative Smith, that is correct. Any purchases over $5,000 would fall under the capital outlay category. Anything under $5,000 falls into services and supplies.
So what's the contingency plan if a computer system shuts down on you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, Dan Adelman can answer that question a little bit better, but we do have some redundancies built in but into our systems so that we can transfer some of those applications from one system to the other. But if we have multiple failures, we'd have to replace those systems.
Two questions more. Under facility rentals and taxes, we're line iteming out $7.6 million. Is it possible to get a list of where those facilities are located, what their square footage cost is to lease or rent those, and then what the square footage cost is to operate those?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, we have a rent schedule. A majority of this is state-owned property that we rent from the Department of Administrative Services, but in our field offices we often will rent from the private sector. But we do have a schedule of that we can provide to the committee.
One last question. And then I feel good.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair George. Under attorney general fees, I see that we're proposing to budget 2.4 with some adjustments. I understand that. What did we actually spend on attorney general fees last biennium?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, we have actuals in the budget for the 9901 biennium, and that was $2.2 million. We had estimated earlier, and this was a year ago when we put the estimates in the budget, so that was an early estimate of spending about $2.1
million. Okay.
We can give you a fresher estimate, if you like, based on 22 months of actual expenditures.
I would be interested in getting that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Oh, I did have one last question.
This is the third last question.
I apologize. Well, I want to feel good about this.
It's okay. That's all right.
What are we getting for $303,000 for dues and subscriptions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, there's a wide variety of professional organizations that our agency belongs to, and particularly in the insurance area and the bank and credit unions area. If you'd like, we can give you a sample listing of some of those dues and subscriptions.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Okay.
I think that would be a great idea. And we all are sensitive right now to what the public perceives, and I know there's a lot of scrutinizing going on of those kind of things, so it'd be good to have those.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having that one.
Okay.
I mean, I'd actually like to see the whole list and not just the sample.
Is it possible to provide the whole list?
Mr. Chairman, it's just a matter of time. So tomorrow, probably not. Next week, yes.
Robin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to cover the other adjustments pretty high level. They're the same adjustments that you are seeing in all of the budgets. Item two is the Department of Administrative Services assessment reduction of $164,553. Number three is the Department of Justice assessment reduction of $243,037. Item four is, this one you wouldn't be seeing in other budgets. Item four is a technical adjustment that reduces the non-limited other funds in OMIP by just under $70 million. That's based on the governor's budget reduction assumptions about reduced FEOP enrollment in the program. I think we had a discussion during the public hearing about why that had occurred. But if anybody's got any questions, you might want to clarify with the agency now. Okay. Item five is the vacant position adjustment that eliminates three positions and $326,819 other funds.
Roma, would you go ahead and let's deal with the note about 2%?
I added a note. If you look at the total vacancies, it doesn't look like there's much in the way of a reduction. I just added this note to clarify that, in fact, there were 27 positions, and I attached a spreadsheet that shows that were reduced during the development of the governor's balanced budget. The other thing I would point out is that because this is an other funds agency, it was not subject to the hiring freeze, so a vacancy might show up on the list one day and be filled tomorrow, so that you do see a large chunk of these vacancies that are already filled.
Mm-hmm.
Item six is the elimination of merit and COLA adjustments of $2.5 million. Item seven is the elimination of inflation adjustments that cuts $1.7 million. And there is a technical adjustment which adds $383,136 other funds, which is a glitch, I think, for this agency. Most agencies were seeing a reduction in their DAS telephone services assessments because of the kinds of system that this agency had in place. They're actually seeing a net increase in cost. And that covers the adjustments in the budget.
So that's package 191.
It's all of them.
Would it be appropriate to move the adjustment?
Well, that's what I was looking for, Representative Smith. Is okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a motion then to move all of the adjustments as listed 1 through 11. Is that correct?
No.
Eight. Yeah, slow. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
Says,
any questions about that?
So you're satisfied, Representative? I want to make sure.
Yes.
I feel very good. Thank you.
Okay, then to approve the adjustments as listed 1 through 8 without objection. So moved.
And I think, Mr. Chair, given the fact that we've got the budget note issued, that, well, we should probably just wait on the remaining motions, and I will bring this back. I had planned on bringing it back tomorrow. I think given the information that's been requested, we will reschedule this for Monday.
Senator Carter, would you like to record your vote on the 50-59?
Carter votes aye.
Oh. Okay. Well, that was abbreviating, but if everybody's happy with that, I'm happy. So is there anything further?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think we have time. The House doesn't go in until 10:30. Mm-hmm. Would you like
3177.
To work 3177?
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 5011, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3177.
And I had asked the agency to give a brief description of what this bill entails.
Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, my name is Scott Hara. I'm the Administrator of the Business Administration Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. House Bill 3177 comes to you based on a subsequent referral. It has passed out of the House Judiciary Committee on April 11th with unanimous support. And what House Bill 3177 does, quite briefly, is gives the agency warrant authority for collecting delinquent accounts. These tools are comparable to those in other large agencies with dedicated collection units. Under current law, the CBS does not have the ability to enforce the collection of debts, and we have to use the services of the Department of Revenue to issue warrants, liens, and garnishments on past due debts. And
yes, sir.
Is that working pretty good? Because we did give more dollars to the Department of Revenue to hire collectors. Is it working pretty good for you guys?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, the Department of Revenue's primary focus is collecting general fund dollars. And so although we're a customer of theirs and they do a pretty good job for us, we feel if we had this tool in our holster, so to speak, that we'd be able to do some of these activities a little bit more timely. Yeah, and it'll also free up the resources of the Department of Revenue to focus on general fund issues rather than on other fund issues as well. I'm not going to bore you with a lot of the testimony I gave to the House Judiciary Committee. I'll just kind of move through here as quickly as I can. We are asking for this ability, again, to bring it in-house, adjust the workload a little bit more appropriately, and it's also we're asking for this ability under a recommendation from a Secretary of State's audit entitled Opportunities to Improve Delinquent Debt Collection by State Agencies. That recommendation is one that we'd like to implement.
I think there's an issue, isn't there, as to the timeliness. In other words, the longer you wait on any collection, the less the chance of making that collection. And I think this is important. I had, first of all, a few questions when I saw it. After I reviewed it, and I realized that this is common practice with everyone except you, and looked at the balance of that payment. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. I fully support House Bill 3177. I do have a little trepidation over 30 days. As a professional who manages an awful lot of loan accounts, 30 days delinquency to allow a warrant to be issued to file a lien is very aggressive. Very aggressive. And so... is that a state standard? Where did the 30 days come from?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, the 30 days is a state standard, but it actually doesn't kick in until we've gone through a number of other procedures that we have to issue first. First, there's two appeal periods that the we're talking about non-compliant employers here, with 60-day appeal periods in each of those, or excuse me, 60-day and a 30-day, and then we begin a demand letter process where we send a series of three billing notices, each at 30-day intervals.
Where in this language, where in this language does it say that?
Yeah.
Because the first sentence is very clear in that if the debt is not paid within 30 days of the date the payment becomes due, and no provision, and I assume by provision that means a phone call, letter, contact from an attorney, has been made to secure the payment, the department may issue a warrant.
Yeah.
Period.
We're talking about the substantive issue. And I think the thing, and if you help me out right here, is the statement the department may issue a warrant, leaving it to your discretion as to, in other words, here's the time in which you may proceed, but that's really going to be up to the agency as to when they do that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. And to follow up, is we have to go through the demand letter process and ensure that the debt has been properly notified and liquidated in legal terms before we can go ahead and apply the garnishments and the liens.
But at the same follow-up, and I understand this is a policy issue more than a budgetary, but at the same time, if a personality became involved in this issue, it'd be very easy for this department to aggressively move on this. And if for some reason you had a business owner who was out of town for an extended period of time and did not receive notification and did not respond, the department could file the lien unbeknownst to the business owner. I assume.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, while possible, I think that'd be a rare circumstance. Knowing the procedures and processes that we need to follow, it'd be a very extended vacation.
Let me ask this question. What's the average length of time from the time a payment becomes delinquent, which I assume is 30 days, to the time then that you would anticipate it would be to collect on the delinquent payment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, a minimum 105 days before we would proceed with warrant authority.
Is there anywhere in this language where it says that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, it's not in the bill. It's
on the record now, though.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think it's a good bill.
Senator Dukes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3177 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any further discussion on the motion to move House Bill 3177 to the Full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation? Okay. Without objection?
So,
I need a carrier to the full committee.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I'll work with the Judiciary Committee for the pony for the House, because that would be a substantive discussion as opposed to the Ways and Means discussion.
Anything further to come before the committee? Okay.
That's it.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3177 and with the top of the gavel.
There is one thing.
We
won't meet tomorrow. Had been scheduled to meet on these bills tomorrow. We will postpone. Yes, but we have been told to be moving.
Mm-hmm. There's no full?
There is full, and it would have occurred after full. But since there's information that the agency needs to come back with, I will schedule this for Monday.
Okay, you're scheduling for Monday, but we have...
You potentially have another bill. This should not take too long.
Okay.
The issues that will be in front of us are the budget notes and then simply adopting the actions that you have taken already, which are the to approve the bill and the dollar amounts in the FTE.
Okay. We also, just so everyone knows, we're going to be dealing with the real estate issue. If there's any concern about the recommendations, let's try to get to deal with those today, and then we'll make sure that a final draft of the resolution will be distributed to everyone. So we're ready to work when we get in on Monday. Should be able to resolve that. Okay.
If not, we'll battle it out over the weekend. Anything further to come forward?
No, I think I'm done now.
Tap of the gavel, we'll be adjourned. I